lay our finger on it, and this is what needs to happen, and try to propose a way forward. But we could have spent more money, but we became paralyzed, and therefore I think as a department we took accountability. It did not have to be a zero expenditure on business infrastructure provided. In terms of the question on the poor performance in respect of people with disabilities, I think it is on the CIFA target, CIFA slide in particular, where they where we stipulate where the target was not reached. I think the CEO, my colleague, also indicated that because of that problem, CIFA then put aside a fund specifically to target people with disabilities, and he spoke to what the uptake rate is. And that fund, I think, was only introduced in December, and I think time with time we will see how that will take off. As a department, we took that further, Chairperson, and we a few months ago in KZN convened a workshop with the organized disability sector and engaged with them really about the issues, problems that they experience and their expectations of government, including having a pitching session for entrepreneurs with disabilities. We agree with Honorable Mabasa that said in your statement about the failure rate of SMMEs, that they need training support, that SMMEs need mentorship. And I think Minister made reference to the issue of we've got to unlock an entire ecosystem around SMMEs and cooperatives. And be very aware of the fact that these businesses go through a different life cycle. At startup, in the middle of the life cycle, when they reach maturity, they need different kinds of training and support. At this stage, we only this year started to work as a portfolio. But last year we initiated a small business portfolio. So we have CEDA who is there to do the small business development. We do some training of cooperatives, but we cannot with confidence say to the House that we bring these things together. But it is something that we plan to do. For the first time now, let me respond differently, Chairperson. The way in which we only now beginning to rethink our standard operating procedures. People who benefit from support from the department apply, and we consider an application. And so we get applications for cooperative incentive scheme, we get applications for BBSDB, we get applications for training. And as we stand, we've never brought all of these together. And so we have now established, for example, an integrated cooperatives development unit where we intend to target that support because it doesn't help to give some this batch of cooperatives money and another batch training and never the two shall meet. So we're in the process of improving our operating procedures. In terms of the hotline, Chairperson, I think the Chair CEO can also speak to that. We have found a solution for that. And maybe just some of the background is it was a service which CEDA was asked to run, and there was a request which came at the time, I think, also from DPME. It was an extremely successful service in terms of the success rate and the payments they were or the problems they were able to resolve in terms of non-payments. In last year, I can't remember the year, it could have been about June, July, we read in the papers that National Treasury, the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer in particular, announcing that they have started a payment hotline with one of the business organizations. I think it is PBSTB. They did not consult with us. They did not consult with CEDA or with DPME who were running the hotline. We wrote to the chairperson, to the DG of Treasury, says, so what is that? How can we have two different payment hotlines in government? They never responded to us. When they didn't respond to us, we wrote to them again and said, well, then we will stop the service if you have just taken over a function that we have. Then I think as the contract was about to end, they came back and said, no, I think you should continue with your service, so with a payment hotline. I can say to honourable members that we take the payment of SMMEs within 30 days as a department very seriously. In 2015-16, we paid all of our invoices within 30 days. This year, there was only one out of, I think it was 1,700 plus invoices that we did could not pay on time. The CFO would be able to explain.
155.
Eh? 155. And so I think that the issue of putting the hotline is still running. We have found a solution, and so I don't think that we need we have found a solution for paying CEDA for providing the funding for that Black Business Council. Chair, there was something that you asked us about the vacant posts, where the DD or one of the members asked the DDG posts were advertised last weekend, and if all goes according to plan, those positions should be filled, or we should be able to make offers by the end of the fourth quarter. You must speak to the debts written off. The vacancies that we have around the data capturers and the claim processing, it was not completed at the end of the fourth quarter. We have since employed the people who are doing that work in Nebus. What have we done in terms of where are we in terms of reaching our MTSF goals? In terms of promoting economic growth, Chair, the most reliable information here is what we get from Stats SA and the quarterly reviews, and we know that our economy is now in a recession, and that impacts on small businesses as well. It means that the cost of capital becomes more expensive, the availability of capital. I'm not sure if the minister came through in minister's presentation. For example, what we have gotten from Stats SA is that there's also, if you saw the decline she referred to a decline in the number of SMMEs in 2009, and that had a direct relationship with the recession, at the global recession, and the impact on our economy at the time. Because there is less disposable cash available, therefore there's less disposable cash family can give to small businesses all that we have, or to informal businesses, which we have to spend in small businesses. What we are doing about that, Chair, by November, we will put on the table a business rescue strategy for SMMEs. It's a unit of research we are doing right now, which the University of Pretoria is assisting us with. In terms of job creation, Chair, our most reliable, or the data that we work with is an analysis of the SARS data. Maybe we must just, we should put a slide together on that when we come the next time. For example, this SARS disaggregates the 1.3 trillion that they have collected, and they say what amount of that 1.3 trillion came from business, and within the business contribution, how much came from small business. And if you look at all of those figures, I don't have my own computer in front of me, but the contribution that small businesses make to corporate income tax, pay as you earn, contribution to the skills development levy is significantly higher than that of large businesses. So even though large businesses contributed 60% to GDP, it is, the evidence abounds around small businesses are the ones that are creating the jobs. In terms of improved public service, Chair, I think the one we can always improve. We have, for the first year last year, put in place a service delivery improvement plan. The external measure of how well we are doing in terms of the kinds of things that all departments are expected to do is measured by impact. And as our minister said, in our first year of operation, we complied and got a 3 score, and we're very confident that there will be improvement in that area. Our minister spoke to investor confidence. I think she opened her comments with remarks with comments around a trust deficit. She gave at least 3 examples in her remarks about confidence in the department, confidence in investing in small businesses. Our EU grant, the investments by private, small private companies. There are several partnerships that we have with companies. On the personnel vacancy, I will ask the head of corporate services to respond to all those questions you raised around recruitment and the additional employees and those numbers, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Honourable members, in connection with the different questions related to the vacancy rate, if I may start with the first one that's related to the vacancy rate of 16.3%, that was as at the financial year 2015-16. As at quarter four 2016-17, our vacancy rate was at 9.8%, which is below the national government average. Then to move to the recruitment committee, we have a recruitment plan, which is what we've been working through for the last financial year as well as the current financial year, which has brought our vacancy rate down to where it is, and we continue to use that plan. It's also what we report against quarterly, monthly, quarterly, and then in Minexco as well. So we keep track of those. As DG has indicated, the 2 DDG post has been advertised in line with the approved startup structure, which is under review. And the reason why it's under review is to address these additional requirements. So to talk to the 10 additional posts that the Chair spoke to, 3 of them in Program 1, 2 of them were internal audit. Because on the startup structure, we didn't have sufficient capacity in internal audit. The other two, there's actually 4 posts there and not 3, Chair. They are sitting in the finance space, and the one is a transport officer and the other one is a travel officer, which also are requirements and were not accommodated for on the startup structure that was approved by DPSA. Then in line, the posts there that are additional to the establishment of the four are the ones that DG had already spoken to that we took over from WRCETA for NEBUS. Those were the four posts there. Then there's two LED interns that we have. Originally there were three, but one had resigned, so there are two. And that's a program that we need to complete. It's a commitment that we had made in terms of the startup transfer from DTI. And then there's one deputy director red tape, which is a post that we didn't have on the startup structure once again. So it's part of the redesign for the new organogram. So we have an organogram that was approved in 2015. And we've placed against that organogram at the beginning of this financial year, 2017-18, and while the redesign is underway, so that we could advertise the DDG post that we have, and there's one third DDG post that will be advertised later in the year once that redesign component has been approved. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I'll just give the CIFA a chance to speak to the gazelles and some of the other issues followed by CIFA.
As long as you are short and to the point, I would like to give the members, honourable members, a second bite. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. I think to be short, I just want to confirm that we are indeed seeing the value that we aimed to achieve out of the gazelles program. These are companies that indeed, following their value builder scorecard, are indeed making growth yields. As I speak, we have a company, for example, that is exporting in doing grid electrification and related work. It's currently working in Benin, it's currently working in Swaziland, it's also having proposals to do some work in Russia. We also have a company that is in industrial cleaning. I'm just using examples, I'll stop at three. A company that is doing industrial cleaning that has recently secured about 158 million contract in a mining company in Mpumalanga, Middelburg, to be specific. Maybe on the third note, let me round up by saying we are having a number of companies that now we are engaging about with the DTI because the DTI has seen these companies to be potential feeds to the Black Industrialist Program. And I think that was the critical essence of why we had this program, because on the other side, we saw that whilst we're having intentions of mainstreaming Black companies in critical programs, programs that drive the IPEP strategy, the pipeline of these companies as Black companies still needed to be nurtured, and the program is doing exactly that.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I'll try to also be quick. There was a question relating to slide 24 where we have exceeded our targets, and it was the question was that if there is money available to do that. Yes, we have the funds that are available to support those programs. In fact, the target is more a bare minimum. We are required to do much more in terms of our mandate to provide support to SMMEs and co-ops, where we utilize what we call the balance scorecard. It's from a rating of 1 to 5. So doing 3 is what we normally measure. When we say a target, it's based on the 3, but we are expected to provide and support as much as possible the the SMMEs, and the funding is available. Also have a line of credit from the immediate shareholder, the IDC, should we exceed the target in terms of the expectation. There was also a question relating to the, I think, the chair of the Portfolio Committee of Small Business in terms of what is it that we are attempting to do to support the development status of the SMMEs on the ground. One of the things that we have done over the last year was that we introduced what we call the post-investment monitoring unit, because in the past we have done a number of loans applying what we call cradle to grave without the dedicated focus in terms of making sure that those clients that are on the ground are specifically supported by a unit. So we created this unit during the course of the last financial year. We're trying to put controls and in place and systems to make sure that we engage more often to the clients that have received funding from our institution. By so doing, we'll be able to identify early warning signals, the challenges that they face much earlier on. It's still an early stage, but we believe that now as we move forward, we'll be able to provide this this support more frequently. On the disability, I wouldn't highlight that the DG has already highlighted on that. I just want to comment on the question by Honorable Chance relating to Small Enterprise Foundation, SEF, in Zanin, where it is indicated that there is stalling in terms of funding. We have given SEF, which is our partner, a 30 million revolving credit facility. To date, they have spent 20 million of it. There is 10 million that is available that they can be able to revolve as and when required. We are also looking at increasing that facility because we believe that they enable us to do more, particularly in the micro and the informal sector, which the capacity largely we do not have as an institution. SEF has been around for more than 20 years. They've applied what we call the Grameen model, and they are on the ground from time to time engaging with the micro enterprises. So there are quite a number of lessons that we can for our direct lending channel to really learn from SEF. So really those are the, I think, questions that I just like wanted to respond to.
Thank you. May I come in, Chair? So it's a follow-up question.
Yes.
Okay, let me do this. Honourable members, now I will allow you to do follow-up questions. We'll start with the Chair.
Thank you.
Honourable Member Mabasa will follow. Yourself. Okay. Honourable Member Mtembu, Honourable Member Gwabaza, Honourable Member Chance, and Honourable Member Snukwanyane, and then Honourable Member McLaughlin. Thank you. In that order.
Thank you very much. I just want to commend SIFA for the post-investment unit for the establishing that. I think that is a step in the right direction. I also want to welcome the fact that the DG is reporting about the business rescue strategy for small business. I also think that is a step in the right direction. I also want to speak on the issue raised by Honorable Shope, that the department is new. We all agree that the department is new. But we also are making this observation that the personnel in the department is not new. And the programs that the department is dealing with are not new. They were inherited from DTI. What has just happened is that the mandate of the department was expanded, and they were given a championing and coordination role, which is not what they were doing when they were in DTI. They were also directed to sign transversal agreements with other departments and other spheres of government. using the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. I just want to make that distinction that as much as we are saying it's a new department, it's actually not a new department. It's a program that has then been running for many years, and it was then removed from DTI to establish a new department and then broaden the scope and also tell the department on how this broadened scope had to be followed. It's championing coordination, follow the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, and do integrated development. If the department was to just do that, it would have long established itself. I just wanted to make that observation. Then the follow-up question is related to NIBAS. The reason that I've been given here is that there is lack of leadership and ownership of the project. Then the first question that I would like to ask from that is, what is the cumulative beneficiaries number from 2014 to 2016-17 financial year, which have been affected by this inability to supply them with tools of trade? The second issue relates to the implementation process, that the program was implemented through the WRCTA. Then the question that I'm asking there is, why was that from the beginning? Because there is CEDA, which is an entity of the department. The WRCTA is not an entity of the department. CEDA's mandate is to provide non-financial services to SMMEs and cooperatives, and that is one of the programs that are expected from to come from CEDA. So the question is, why not do it internally as you are doing it now? Why was it given to WRCTA, who doesn't report to the Portfolio Committee on Small Business, when there is CEDA? Then the other question that I have is to both the department and CIFA. It's a follow-up on the people with disabilities. Slide 25 of CEDA claims that they have achieved 57% of their disability target. Now, the Portfolio Committee undertook a study to Gauteng in 2015, and there were three sharp challenges that we discovered there. One was the potential of SHARP as a 100% entity that is owned by people with disabilities. And that is a very positive aspect, but there were huge challenges that we discovered there, such that we cried, all of us. And we were accompanied by the department and the agencies. And we made recommendations in relation to SHARP. Now, the question that I would want to ask is, has that been addressed, those issues that we raised in the oversight report, in as far as the needs of SHARP? Because if that had been those issues, this 57% relates to that. This country can do much better in using the example of SHARP with addressed shortcomings that SHARP was currently facing when we went there. That is a very good example of what this country can do in addressing employment and ownership of enterprises by people with disabilities. So I would want to end there.
Thank you, Honourable Member Mtembu. Oh, yeah, okay. Sorry, it's yourself and then Honourable Member Mtembu.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. It's just a follow-up. Actually, I'm interested in what motivated the growth of Gazelles. The inspiration that made us to end up even linking with trade and industry in seeing them as a conduit, a very valuable conduit. Have we observed the same conduit? While I admire this, have we observed the same conduit in starting with the spaza shops, the hawkers, the street vendors, in conduiting them, if there is that English word, into the Gazelles? In other words, I'm saying, while the Gazelles are in the middle here, and they feed to Black Industrialist Program, do we at the same time appreciate and value the spaza shops, street hawkers, and street vendors feeding into the Gazelles? You know, because I think that's very important for me. The last, because there's no time, is a link with training institutions. Do we exhaust that properly outside CEDA, you know, just so that we use all the spheres of government? Thanks, Colleague Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mtembu. Thank you, Chairperson. I think now I'll be commenting. As Meshop earlier on has said, in terms of the radical economic transformation, this is the department that, according to her, should be seen responding positively towards the call. And in terms of, even when the minister was here in her presentation, she said the department is doing everything, adhering to the call of the 2030 vision, the NDP. The issue of job creation, and also addressing, you know, the triple challenges, your poverty, inequality, and unemployment. And as Ndate Mabaso has just said, you know, the issue of cooperatives and the issue of street vendors, these are the people in terms of dealing with the past imbalances, the past injustices, are the people that the department, you know, should be having their interests at heart, you know, not neglecting others as the program of the Gazelles is going. You know, these are the people that are to be motivated, are to be confident in the government of the day. You know, the government that has their interests at heart, that is passionate about them in terms of ensuring where they're coming from and what is it that they are also doing in terms of contributing positively towards the economy of the country, you know. And we are to really ensure that the situation is turned around, because the economy of the country is burdened by your it has got a burden for it to be a productive budget. It's a consumption budget. So these people, when they are there, they're not only doing it for their survival, but they also assisting us as the government, you know, to deal with these situations that are there on the ground, your poverty, unemployment, and inequality. So as you I wasn't like satisfied. I did not really get the answer.
what is the intention of the department in terms of your co-ops, the NIPAs, as the budget was taken, you know, when they were not satisfied, you know, in the manner that they were to be satisfied, in the manner that they were to be encouraged, they were to be motivated in doing business, seeing themselves growing as co-ops. That is what I will comment, that, you know what, the department, to me, it has to be really, really seen responding positively towards the call of radical economic transformation.
Thank you for your comment. We'll now move on to Honourable Member Chance.
Thank you, Chair. First question relates to the Enterprise Incubation Programme. This committee has been calling for a long time for the integration of the incubation support program from the DTI into this department, but it hasn't happened. So that's why you've set up the EIP. So I'd like to get some feedback, please, on what is happening with that program and how you compare it to the Department of Trade and Industry's incubation support program. The second question is, one of CEDA's desired outcomes is sustainable, competitive, and growing small enterprises and co-ops. So I'd like to know what measures you put into place for that outcome, and particularly bearing in mind the dreadful survival rate that we've seen of co-ops in our oversight visits. Have you put into place any targets for survival rate, both of co-ops and small businesses that the department is supporting? And then thirdly, in terms of the medium-term strategic framework goals, one of the most important things to measure this department's performance is impact, as the chair herself has referred to. But it's very difficult to measure true impact unless you are able to track it over time. And we've been going on about this and on and on and on about longitudinal studies. How do you intend to take this up within the department? In other words, you're looking at the companies that you're supporting over a period of time and seeing, is there net growth? Because you're going to have some businesses that you're supporting go down, some go up. So just to take a cross-section at any particular time doesn't really give us the information we need. We need to see the cumulative ups and downs of those businesses that are supported in order to be able to trace impact. And then we'll be able to see what are the programs that are working and what are the programs that are not working, and then recommend to the Treasury that this program should be shut down or this program should be supported with massive growth. And if I may, Chair, just one other question. In terms of your research into the ecosystem, to what extent are you working with the Aspen Development Network, Andy, the Aspen Network of Development Entrepreneurs, which has produced a very comprehensive entrepreneurial ecosystem map in South Africa? And is it really not sensible to combine the work that they're doing with what work you intend to do rather than possibly duplicating it and coming up with two totally separate ecosystem maps, which really doesn't help anybody? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I base my question on slide 11. I see that on goods and services and machinery and equipment, is this an overspending or underspending? Overspending. Yes. It's overspending, yes, yes. But my question is not around that, the overspending. I think that has been raised before. You know, in this committee, the Standing Committee on Appropriations, I'm sure the Portfolio Committee asked the same question as well. In their meetings. Just on this, we would like to see data on how you are doing on the set, the 30%. Let me qualify it. The minimum of 30% set aside, and I want to emphasize the minimum 30% set aside. We would like to see the number of SMMEs as a department now, SMMEs and cooperatives you are doing business with. And the monetary value thereof and the profile in terms of women, youth, persons with disability, geographic spread, and jobs created, and sustainability. Because it's one thing to support the SMMC or cooperative for 1 year, you let it go, it dies. You'd rather sustain 10 cooperatives and 10 SMMEs continuously rather than rush to create new, to support new ones elsewhere and dump the ones that you've done. It's like in infrastructure, if you like, the balance between building the new infrastructure and maintaining the existing one. I'm making that an analogy. So that's the point. And the SMMEs and cooperatives that are doing business with the private sector, I'm saying the department should take in tracking that as well. And perhaps you might want to assign one of your sections, perhaps CEDA, because those who are doing business with the private sector would largely seek the assistance of CEDA and then go do business with I'm just making an example, with the private sector as suppliers and so on and so on and so on. So these two streams of SMMEs and cooperatives, your own and those that are going doing business with the private sector. And those that are doing business with the private sector, check the issue of skills transfer. So that at some point they may be able to stand on their own. Now this becomes more critical in infrastructure. I'm not too sure how much of infrastructure you do. I'm making an example because if you take an SMME or a cooperative and it becomes a supplier to, for instance, a Group 5 in infrastructure, it will not be enough that that cooperative or SMME is just a supplier and it does not learn the skill of actually building the road or a bridge or a dam. So that's the magnitude of the kind of work that all of us must do. Now I'm asking this question. Now let me. I might be asking a question you have answered, because in slides 15, 16, and 17, I see the numbers, women and youth, and percentages. Is this question I'm asking of you related to these pages that I'm referring to now, 15, 16, in fact, from about 14, 15, 16? Is it telling the story that I'm asking for? Those other... those other slides from 14, 15, 16, 17, 18... Are they telling the story I'm asking for? But what is not clear in those slides, 14, 15, 16, and 17, is your targets versus the achieved targets. What you have reflected there is the targets plus the money spent. You are not telling whether you have achieved all the predetermined targets, and this is the amount of money you have spent on them, or you have achieved less targets, and this is the amount of money you have spent on those. So if you could clarify those things, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll now move on to Honorable Member Nkwanyane.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yes, some of the questions are overlapping. I'm just going to ask two questions. In fact, clarity-seeking questions. On slide number 8, the last portion on cooperative incentive scheme, where it says technical challenges resulted in the development finance unit being unable to issue letters of approval to successful applicants from December until February. I'm a bit confused there as to what this means. I mean, issuing letters, what technical challenges, perhaps if you can share with us what the actual technical challenges are that takes 2 months to issue letters, and because in terms of the service delivery implication, it just says 43 supported instead of 45, which to me is not such a bad thing. But now, during those 2 months, what were the technical challenges that actually resulted in letters not being issued out? And then the second one, slide number 13, under the Auditor General's findings, in terms of the last one, finance, if you look at those findings, there we've got 9 findings, but in terms of progress to date, I see that I'm not sure what exactly happened. For instance, there's one that it says that they are all resolved. So are they all resolved? I see that issues related to the compilation of financial statements are addressed and resolved. So does it mean that all those others, and then the next one says payroll certificate, partial compliance, which is fine. In fact, this one, I just need clarity, whether that one, these two, the first and the third one, cover all these other findings, because there are 9 in total. So just a matter of clarity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member.
Thank you, my chairperson. I just want to say thank you very much to Chairperson Bengu, my sister, for the explanation.
Okay.
Yeah, because I thought she should hear. I really thank her for the explanation about the adulthood of her department. I understand that, and I understand she's the mother. You see, mothers are very strict. But mina njengosesiwakho, I'm umamkhulu. Umamkhulu is usually very sympathetic and understanding. So to me, they still have that sympathy. I will still give them that accommodation of being new. Because of my own experience, I had a home in Bushbuck Ridge. I had to go to Hoedspruit. I didn't change anything. I took all my dishes and old furniture. But because it is a new situation, I had to struggle to adjust myself in the new house. So that is what I'm dealing with. And I understand this department very well. I know they have been in trade and industry. I used to go to that committee in the last fourth parliament. So what is important is what she said, that they have made some observation and recommendations. Please go and correct those things that they've given you from themselves as a portfolio committee, from ourselves and from the AG, and from your own internal audit. That is what is important, and that is what I expect at the end of October. But for now, you have my mercy. The other thing that I wanted to say, Chairperson, you know, it, as I was in the bus, I was just thinking aloud when I was listening to the news, this investor confidence story. And I asked myself, who are these investors? And the answer is all of us here are investors, all of us. If we want to keep our economy running, we can't depend on other people who will be merciful to us. If each one of us, kona manje nge April, nge October, the rain, it's raining, you go and plow and in, just hire two people, you'll be making the economy to run. I am just saying that. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of clarity-seeking questions. On slide 6, the block that's headed goods and services, and then the next block is entitled value, and the value there is given as 2,535 million rand. But in the reason column, it's two amounts there mentioned at 2.4 million and 900,000, which adds up to 3.3 million, not 2.53 million. I just wanted to know why is there a discrepancy there? If you could assist us, please. And then on slide 7, goods and services, under reason it says that the National Evaluation Plan executed by DPME and approved by Cabinet, request for rollover submitted to National Treasury, 3.2 million. That indicates to me there was an underspend of 3.2 million, but where is that underspend to be found here? I don't see the correlating figure, because obviously that money was there. You didn't spend it, so you applied for a rollover, but where's the underspend? And then in the next block along, it says service delivery implications. The bottom one there says the 2016 annual review was advertised for a second time so as to ensure a more representative sample, etc. Now, that must have come with a cost, and I imagine that cost was not initially budgeted for because you didn't initially think you were going to advertise a second time. So can we just hear where you got that funding from, and was that correctly authorized afterwards? Because obviously there's no reference yet to the amount that that cost. And then I also just had a few questions as regards the AG's findings on slide 13. I notice in under ICT, there's a line here that reads, review of logon and access violations on Personal. And that seems fairly serious to me, because Personal is your payroll. And so if there are access violations on payroll, does that tell me that there were people who were cooking the books? Were there people who were making adjustments to their salaries? And because in the progress to date, there's nothing there about consequence management or any investigation carried out. It just says the system controller functions were incorporated in the drafted systems policies. All very well, but what about what happened already? Is there no investigation into what actually happened there and with what result? And then the next one as well, we've got non-compliance related to SPD 4 being signed after the service has been rendered, possible cover quoting. I don't see any reference again to any consequence management or any investigation there. This is concerning because these things are happening. You know they're happening because the Auditor General is telling you that, but you're not doing anything about it. It's just, oh, well, we'll fix the policy or we'll just fix the problem. But you're not going back and finding out what happened, why did it happen, is there some action that needs to be taken against a specific staff member. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much. And then can I just comment and then give you my questions? I know, I think you're the CFO, madam, am I right? Yeah. I know the CFO tried to explain why they're overspending. Madam, we don't want explanation. We just want compliance. Even with programs, if you have not budgeted money in a particular program, especially on personnel, that one, there are strict rules there. So we don't want you to use money you don't have. That's what it means, using money you don't have. All right? And where there's been a environment, indeed your environment should not be above 8%, because then it has got to go via Parliament to be ratified by Parliament. All right, and then also overspending is, you can't describe it otherwise, it is fiscal ill-discipline. So what we want from you is correction. Because as you incur all these, the people on the ground, they will not say you as the officials have incurred this. They say government is failing. And they all interpret even these deviations without understanding as corruption. Now we all have a responsibility to make the broader community to trust this government by the way in which we conduct ourselves, following procedure to the letter, not bending the rules, and doing things within the parameters of the law. So help us to regain this trust, because it is not government, it is the officials. And at your level, you should be knowing that, and you should assist this government by correcting at your level. All right, and then the accounting officer. To you, madam, I would like to say the incidence of 1.834 million irregular expenditure linked to Bavumile training for non-compliance with practice note 8. I must say that it's a concern. Okay, we're using this as a practical example. Just the culture of doing things irregularly. That's what we want to be corrected. It's going to be in the basket, or it's a package. It's in the package of all those conducts that have got to be corrected so that this government can be trusted by the people on the ground. All right? But also it is ill-discipline, madam. It's fiscal ill-discipline. There's no other description for it. Now, as the accounting officer, my understanding is that your role is to prevent fruitless, wasteful, and irregular expenditure. But also your other role is that you need to instill the culture of intolerance of waste among workers and the culture of deviating from, of not respecting the law. It is your role, madam. And you need to develop a culture of innovation and provision of incentives where incentives are deserved, but also to embark on consequence management. Now, the high risk of you not embarking on consequence management as the DG is that then your head will be on the, on the block. This consequence management will have to be applied on you, because you take full responsibility for all these anomalies. So I think the best is to avoid, and maybe if I may use, double avoidance, so that things are done correctly. And we keep hearing this is new. Let's be honest, it can't be new forever. I mean, you've been operating from 2014. What is new, Gant? Can't be new forever. Every time we expect you to rise to new heights, so that we can achieve. In the main, I deliberately asked you because I want you to be seized with this, and your mind must be preoccupied with this every time. Promotion of economic inclusive growth, this must be seized with it, must be so conscientized about this, so that as you move and you implement your programs, you must care. I hear you talking about stats. Yes, you can use that information, but you can use it to measure your performance. You've got to be seized with promotion of economic growth, job creation. You are business, it's economic, what, business development, what is it? Small business development. It is so linked to promotion of job creation and investor confidence. There's a question you did not respond to. I think it was asked by Honorable Member Shoppes Tole, where he said, can you explain your success in ensuring that tenders target empowerment of the youth, the women, and the disabled? You have not responded to that question. And this is government's deliberate and a priority. Mm-hmm. That if it is successfully implemented, you will definitely see economic inclusive growth. Because these people, instead of them depending on government, they will then also contribute towards the economy by paying taxes, and then we get our salaries. And if you don't, then we fail to get people to be employed. I promise one day all of us will be gone because we paid by the taxpayers. Okay? So that was my comment here. All right. Then my question is, the department established the governance forum with entities, which I think is like a collaborative strategy. And it's needed if you are to achieve, working together so that you can do more. All right? Now, the forum meets almost quarterly, and also the chief executive officers of CEDA and CIFA sit in this forum. We commend you for this innovation. Okay? But can you indicate the main issues, challenges, and risks identified in the forum? Because obviously the forum sits with a purpose. So, but then also I would like your internal auditor to at least explain to this meeting if he, after identifying these risks, if the internal auditor has developed a risk management strategy, and also whether you have a risk manager, because I know you've got a lot of vacancies, because without this risk manager, there's a high risk here. We might not achieve on the inclusive economic growth that we want to see, and also assisted by these entities. All right. But also, I'd like to know if you have the entities' oversight strategy, because you do need to closely monitor them. Because if you listen to the stories that we get, that they say they don't get help by these entities. When they go there, they're told you don't meet the requirement. And to me, it's you know what? It's not on. Because you will be dealing with people who have never been involved in this small business and all those things, your co-ops, it means then it must be your responsibility to also assist them to meet the requirement and not to be happy to send them back and then the money at the end of the financial year gets rolled over. It doesn't get rolled over. No, it goes back to National Treasury. So do you have the oversight strategy over your entities? Okay, and then CIFA. We have information that you have impairments that remain a concern and have increased in the past 4 years. Impairments. That's CIFA. And these impairments may impact the future financial sustainability of CIFA. What have you done? It was not good enough when you are the whole CEO, and when you were interviewed, you said you give it the best of your ability, you will assist. And now we've got impairments. Now, what have you done after identifying this gap? We would want to know your turnaround strategy here. It's not good enough to come and tell us that. We don't want to hear that. We want to hear that now that you qualified and you were put in this position and you were trusted, so you are now able to assist, and where there are problems, you turn those problems around, you find solutions. And in finding solutions, you consult even with those who have been there before you, and then find the solutions. That's what we want. We want to hear that you have found the solutions, not to come here and lament. All right, again, CIFA. We know that financial intermediaries play a critical role in facilitating access to finance for SMMEs and cooperatives. Can you outline key challenges and opportunities in the strategic partnerships with intermediaries? That's CIFA. And then CEDA. I think this was progressive thinking, that you have identified the need to be more accessible, especially in underserviced areas and rural areas. rural development is government's priority, and there was alignment of thinking here. But kindly outline progress on this critical imperative. How far have you gone with this? Coming closer and accessible and servicing the rural areas as well. This is critical as both committees want to see vibrant, equitable and sustainable rural communities. I'd like to stop here. I've got too many questions. You will soon think I'm personal. But thank you so much. May you then respond and be short and to the point. 12 o'clock, I know Mr. Is already leaving. But if you can respond to his question first and then so to here before you leave. What do you think? Yeah, what was your question so that we start with your question?
Okay, I'll ask the CFO to respond to those questions. I thought that we had answered several of them.
Okay. All right. CFO?
Pardon?
Slide 6 and 7. My first question.
6 and 7. On the goods and services.
Add
up to 3.3. But what we were saying is to give an overall value of the invoices that we had received that led to the overspend. But in total, it would have been 3.3, but we only overspent because there were other underspending items that were not material. So we just wanted to show the overall figures just for those two items that came in unplanned for during that time. If you could please guide me on the next one, sir. Oh.
Where was the
underspend? No. Oh, yes. As we had said, I think DG had presented on, when she was presenting, spoke about the research programs that we partnered with DPME. We have underspend, but this rollover we submitted, but sadly was not supported by National Treasury during, but that would have been during the 17-18 financial years. Yes, it forms part of that. And on the audit, sorry.
Okay, no, I was also there. About the cost of the second advertising.
What we normally do when we advertise in, yes, it would have cost us money, about 3,000 plus to go with government printing, yes. And on the audit issues, we take all the Auditor General's findings very seriously, and I think this now will be answering yourself and the Honourable Member on the other side. The issue on system controller functions, there was no... the finding was more on the procedures that were not documented, not so much that there was any ill-doing that warranted an investigation to be undertaken. Hence we have the resolved because we didn't have procedures that were fully detailed on what the functions of a system controller has to be and what it should not be. And the Honourable Member on the 9, it is indeed 9, that's why we have 1, 2, 3 up to 7 because they are all related to the compilation of the financial statements. And the ones that we left out, which is the 8 and 9, the payroll certificate is what DG had also said we had not fully resolved, partially resolved, and consequence management has taken place in that DG actually signed off letters to officials to explain themselves why they didn't, not so much that there was fraud, but because they didn't do it in time as prescribed by law, which says sign on or before payday and receive and return to the office of the CFO within 10 days, but our policy says within 5 days. Okay. Yes, I note your comments, Chairperson, and we do really do take financial discipline seriously. Without really wanting to respond to you, I accept what you have said, and we will be improving as a department in terms of putting together demand plans that correlate with the cash flow projections. Even though it's still difficult as we speak, I know Chairperson saying we're not new 2014, but independently we started on the 1st of April 2016. Everything else was supported by, this is now the second year that we are on our own. And as DG may have introduced staff, you had acting DDG. Also the issue of stabilizing the structure first, such that we are able to know who to fully work with on a full-time basis in terms of making sure plans are in place, plans are implemented, and the related resource requirements that are aligned to budgets are compiled in detail for us not to be reflecting these negatives that are unpalatable. But we do take full responsibility for that, Chairperson.
I think I've answered all.
And Chair, maybe just to end the comments.
Oh, there was one other question that Chair has said we didn't respond to in terms of how proactively are we in looking for empower small businesses in our procurement processes. In fact, there were two of those. When we look at goods and services, I just don't have the numbers now. We will probably provide them as requested. I think we're doing fairly well in terms of, yes, I think it's about 60% that we're supporting SMMEs. The question that we would be unable to answer in relation to what the Honourable Member was saying, can we provide impact and all that. From a procurement perspective, we don't go beyond that. But I do know that our colleagues with the programs, incentive programs, do have the monitoring and evaluation function that actually seeks to actively monitor the downstream impact of what we do. However, the Chief Procurement Officer's centralized supplier database that was introduced in 2016-17 is being improved to allow for us to be able to, because currently, BAS does not allow for you to know who the supplier is. You then have to find other means of classifying them. So going forward, we should be able, as government, using CSD, able to know who has been paid, how do we classify them, how do we categorize them, are we making headways in terms of the previously disadvantaged benefiting in terms of the, I think in there we have to look at women, ownership, youth, township. I think we also, at some point, I think there's also military veterans as part of the indicators that one can monitor and report on, and hopefully as a department we'll be able to have access to the database to then monitor at a national level how we're doing.
If I can try and draw together the comments on fiscal discipline and fiscal ill-discipline, your points are well received, Chair, and I'm glad that you're doing it, that my colleagues are hearing it, because it's a responsibility which we share, and to give the assurance that, for example, the 1.8 million that you made reference to, and we're not shifting responsibility, but it is one of those transactions that was inherited from the DTI, something that came from 2014, that we actually uncovered and resolved. And if we didn't resolve it and go in terms of, we probably wrote to about 6 different officials who were involved in that transaction value chain to hold them to account. So we do that, Chair. And so the issues that remind us that we should be seized with, we appreciate that. I just want to ask my colleagues to respond to, and I also appreciate the comments of the chairperson of our portfolio committee and the context that you provided. If I can start there, Chair, that in terms of the agreements and transversal agreements, we had an agreement with the Department of Higher Education and Training. And so that becomes a key to enter into other agreements. And many of the small
informal businesses that we encountered was in fact in the retail sector. It is your spaza shops, it is in that area, and therefore it is part of the mandate of the retail wholesale and retail CETA, and we could then in part use their resources and their network to be able to do that. We have agreements with other CETAs also, because we, again, in terms of benefiting, optimizing their mandate. I'm going to ask Mojalefa to just respond, and maybe the Takani, the CEO of CETA, can follow, just on the area of people with disabilities. I think the example of the project that you visited in 2015 and the model that is there and why we've not taken it forward, and I don't know whether... let me just ask him to speak to it.
Can I maybe check if the CEO can start first?
Okay, Chair, thank you very much. With regard to the matter of SHARP, Chair, I engaged with the team. There hasn't been progress. I have to be frank. There hasn't been progress on our side in able to support them. It's something that we will continue to look at that, Chair. The team look from when they engage with some of the members of SHARP in terms of involvement in commercial activities. I think there was some bit of a challenge in that respect, but we'll follow up. So there's no activities on that at this stage. Perhaps
the chairperson would like to make a follow up. Are you done on that one? Eh? Okay.
So we are adults seated here. I don't want to sound personal, but we also expect honesty. If something has not been done, it's better to say we have not looked at that. Because when you give an answer that does not relate to the real situation, we will be able to pick up from the answer that you are giving, that you are just responding for the sake of responding. If this issue was taken, firstly, both Jeff and Mjalifa would have responded and not asked Sifa to respond. Because the approach that is required in addressing issues of SHARP as per our report don't necessarily reside with CIFA. They reside with the department. They require engagement by the department, with the Department of Human Settlement, with the Department of Social Development. They also require action by the marketing unit of the department. There's nothing that CIFA has to respond to about this matter. That project doesn't require any funding from CIFA. It requires a complete, holistic strategy to address all the challenges. So, if mina ngifuna abantu aba honest to the T, mabengawenzanga umsebenzi, bathi siyaxolisa sikwenzanga lokho. Because munginikeza i-answer engaziyo ukuthi uyithatha la eminweni. Enye into efike ngicasu ukuthi usubona ukuthi ngeke ngibone, ungenza isilima, ngeke ngibone ukuthi ungitshela amanga, ngibe ngibone ukuthi ungitshela amanga. It's better to admit and say we have not done that, we will come back and report on it. Can we treat each other in that way?
Chair, thank you very much.
Chair, with Sharp, we had engaged with Sharp with COA to be able to provide support via COA. It never happened that because we then focused primarily the project with COA was largely abalimi, and then I think the one for Sharp could not, it was not implemented. And even up to today, it has not yet been implemented, that particular projects to provide access to market in terms of the products that Sharp were producing, which were the stuff which could be made available from and could be some government departments could take up and be able to provide them with procurement opportunities. So it's a work that I think we're going to take up and be able to implement it, but it has not yet taken place, Chairperson. Thanks.
My problems, the Sharp have got nothing to do with COA. Sharp is not in the agricultural space. They are manufacturing. Their issues were around marketing. Their issues were around being assisted with the raw material. Their issues were around the residential area that they live in. Kuyano galapaya, abana wama toilet, abana zuzing, matalim kukwin. And that had nothing to do with agriculture and COA. In actual fact, they are producing protective wear that is used by all municipalities. PRASA, Transnet, AXA, all these things, the reflective things, that's what they are producing, and there is 30% minimum procurement buy that can be accessed for those people. But it's got nothing, absolutely nothing to do with COA.
No, I think what is important is for department officials and the leadership to, the first comments from the chairperson co-chairing was quite appropriate. But I was saying, it's important that when the chairpersons or members make comments, they are taken seriously as guiding. I think what the chair was saying was, let's not debate this issue because you are irrelevant. You should say, yes, we are irrelevant with apology, and then we will do better next time. But to waste everybody's time, we won't manufacture machineries for. And one other important thing is that it's very unusual to have our organizations of people with disabilities taking self-initiative, marketing for themselves, looking after themselves, not asking for money, but asking for support. It's very rare. It doesn't happen. That is what we should be grabbing as gold and run with it and demonstrate it nationally, even internationally, and say this is what is best that people can copy from. But with a risk of not going into, we don't have time, I also feel seriously disappointed if we can't, as was Ushaya Shayan, I ask, so it can't work that way.
Did you sort this thing?
The point is taken, Chairperson, and I think your reprimand is correct. We are unable to respond. Can I ask MJ to speak to the questions that were raised on NEBUS and on the EAP? EIP, what did I say? And Elise will speak to the questions on the research
Thank you, Chair. On the, I thought the...
Linda will speak to Nebus.
Okay. Okay, I was about to title Nebus, actually. So I thought DG also touched a bit on Nebus, but maybe let me speak about why Nebus was not implemented at CEDA, as the question that was raised by Chair. I think early on, when we actually took, or when the department was established, we knew that we need to enter into some strategic partnerships with organizations that can deliver on certain projects because they have certain expertise and efficiencies. And what we did is that in our quest to actually deliver a very efficient program around Nebus, in the main, based on the experience of the fact that this has been is a delicate and has been a neglected area of work. And we then saw WNR CETA as one partner that actually fit the purpose. Fit the purpose in the sense that they were already delivering certain programs around trade development, the development of traders. Not necessarily the informal ones, but any trader. And therefore, we took this opportunity to engage with them, where we actually entered into some kind of a strategic partnership with them to deliver on this program. And we knew that they were going to deliver on it because they did actually train about 1,000 and the number of informal traders. Least we know that things will tend as they tend later on when the equipment was supposed to actually to be delivered on these enterprises. Coming to the EIP is actually, there was a sort of under expenditure, even though we really tried our best to spend, I think about 20 million CFO, 20 at the end of the financial year. And I think we have tested the system with EIP, and we have also seen with those that we have approved that we can be able to actually disperse the funding to the EIP. We also in the process of packaging the program so that we can actually deliver it to CEDA to implement, because at least we know now the system and how it can work. But we want to package it in such a way that we don't lose the element of market access so that it actually remain as a very distinct program, even if it delivered at CEDA level. I thought those were the questions, Chair, that I needed to answer.
How do you compare it to DTI incubators?
Okay. How do you compare it to DTI incubators is that I've already mentioned the question of the element of market access, which the element that DTI component didn't have. The DTI element, while it had a partnership element in terms of partnering with the private sector companies, it didn't actually focus on making sure that the enterprises that were put into the incubator, they already have takeoff agreements as market element that we actually have. So that's distinction of the program that we have. And also I think the question was why this the DTI program was never transferred. I think that one I won't have really answered, because it has been something that has been eluding the department for some time. Thanks, teacher.
Thank you, Chair and honourable members. I'll just touch on the issues around Nebus as raised by Honourable Ntembo. We just wanted to assure the honourable member that we are looking at Nebus comprehensively. We are just not looking at giving people some training and equipment. If you look at the slide that we've just projected, it talks to the strategic intervention pillars to operationalize Nebus. We must admit that we are not doing everything that is there, but we are working towards doing that. For example, legal and regulatory environment, intergovernmental coordination, enterprise development and promotion, stakeholder management and knowledge management and capacity building. So we are doing bits and pieces of the interventions that are there. For example, we've seen some progress. Gauteng, they've come up with a strategy that they call Gauteng in Khibus Gauteng informal business uplifting strategy. Limpopo is working on that. We are assisting them in developing their provincial strategy. Free State, they've done some work. KZN, they've done some work. So we are working with the provinces because we think it's a shared responsibility in developing informal businesses. On the next slide, Chair, it talks to the graduation model that the honourable members were raising, that I would just thinking about keeping informal businesses informal, but you can see on the, we call it a Vuvuzela graduation model, because we see some of these informal businesses graduating and becoming cooperatives, some of them becoming independent SMMEs, others becoming emerging farmers, because we think they can be involved in the whole value chain rather than selling those things that they are selling on the street, but they can even go further and plant and harvest some of the products that are there. So there is a plan in terms of ensuring that there is graduation from being informal to being viable enterprises. Then on the question that was raised by Honorable Kwabaza on the slides 14, from slide 14, 15 and 16 on the PPSDP and CIS. On the graph that is on the left-hand side, there is targets. For example, we are saying the target for the fourth quarter was 140, but we actually funded 137. And the amount we're targeting, we wanted to spend 60, and we spent 69 million. And then the other two slides are explaining the mainstreaming targets that we have within the department. For example, we've decided that as a start, 50% of our interventions will go to women-owned enterprises, 30% will go to youth-owned, 50% must go to enterprises that are based in the townships, and 30% must go to enterprises that are based in rural areas. So the other slides that are on the right-hand side, I must admit that it doesn't show that we were targeting, for example, 30% of this funding to go to women. We just put the actual numbers there, that we funded 38 women-owned enterprises out of 137 that were funded in the fourth quarter. So the following slides then breaks it down in terms of the provinces where the money was spent, of which most of it goes to Gauteng. The other next province is KZN. There is very little that we having around Northern Cape, for example, which is a province where we're trying to come up with serious intervention. And then the bottom graph talks to those mainstreaming targets that we have within the department, which talks to rural, township, urban, and urban areas. It shows that most of our interventions goes to cities, which is mostly around the Johannesburg and Gauteng. And then we have 5% in rural areas, which is a serious underachievement, because we're targeting 30% of these interventions to go to the areas around rural areas. And then I think the next graph also talks to the same thing in terms of, but it breaks it down in terms of the sectors, which sectors we are, most of the PPSDP projects are in, which it shows that it's construction, services. There's very little that is in agriculture and mining and transport.
On order, it's not a nice word, but I thought we are now getting a re-input broadly, unconsciously from the department, you know, because I think it should be focusing on question, passing question. But the way it's being done, I thought I must caution that it must be more brief than it's being done. Otherwise, we'll end up with another re-input. Thanks.
Okay, no, that's fine. Can we please be corrected? Because initially I actually said, let's be short and to the point. So if this is the question, just respond to the question. I think that will assist. If you have made progress in terms of penetrating the rural areas, just say so. If you have not made progress, But you must then say you have not made progress, but you must then tell us about a turnaround. Because we want that progress. Aren't you promised? And in Afrikaans, belofte, max geld. Okay.
The other questions were on research, and I think they're well taken. We agree with them that impact can only be measured longitudinal studies over a number of years. And I think we have said we only introduced our research function in last year. And we started establishing a baseline, for example, by doing an action research project now on co-ops. I'll just give over to Elise. Make it brief.
Thank you. Just to respond to the question of whether or not we're working with Andy, yes, we are working with Andy, and whether it's a duplication, no, it's not a duplication. Why I say so, the studies done by Andy and Sea Africa, that's a study that was done for the ecosystem that was deliberated during the Global Entrepreneurship Congress, was done from a demand-side point of view, where the work, the ecosystem that's done now by the department is from a supply-side point of view. For instance, where the other one was looking in terms of there's a need for microfinancing. The study that we are now doing is actually breaking that down and saying this is what is available in this area. So the one is from a demand side and the other one is from a supply side. So it's complementing each other. From there we can now actually find the gaps and see how we can fill those gaps. In terms of longitudinal, we want to, that's ideal where we want to move to. It's very expensive. What we're currently looking at is there are a lot of studies currently done that are longitudinal studies. One is the NIT study, and the other one is the SES study by Stats SA. And what we want to do is we've asked DPME to work with us to see what data sets are already available from those longitudinal studies and what are the data sets that's required by the Department of Small by us as a Department of Small Business Development, and where those gaps are then and how we can fill those gaps so as to see how we can maximize on what government spending already done on longitudinal studies. Thank you.
Where you have been found wanting, I think the best would be there to submit to us in a quarter's time, give you time, of the improvement. Because after this, you must develop an improvement plan and then give us your improvement report. Improvement report, okay. I take it that you've responded to all the questions.
Do you want the assurance from internal audit, Chair, or you can that be in writing?
I'm sure it can be in writing, ne? Internal audit, ne? Yes, sir?
I was responding to the first question, Comrade Chair. Now, I suggest that all the unanswered questions be answered too in writing. For an example, I still have mine that was not answered, but we need not re-articulate them.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I think, you know what, I do want us to round up this discussion, né? And then in rounding it up, I am going to ask my co-chair to give a closing remarks. But DG, if you can also give us your closing statement, where you commit yourself, I'm still mentioning it in passing, and then she will then give closing remarks. In those answers that you'll be responding to, né? When you, in writing, and then please let that, I think you will forward those answers to both secretaries of the committee and then the portfolio committee and us, because you can see we are working together. It's called collaboration strategy. Okay, no, that's fine. In those answers, if you can also give us your success in ensuring that, where feasible, compulsory subcontracting at least 30% of tenders above are given to those that, you know, need to be assisted. I'm sure you know about that introduction by National Treasurer. So if you can give us your progress report there, your success in ensuring that is happening, and also success in supporting a procurement of locally manufactured goods, because that's your... And lastly, if you can give us a report on your monitoring unit and its inspection service and its inspections on service delivery sites, because it will not be good enough to sit in the office. It's got to go out there and then make sure that, you know, and that also comes from the NTP. Make sure that, I think that's all. And then, it will not be fair that we invite Treasury and just Treasury does not comment. Treasury, is Treasury here? Just for your, yes, sir. Just your comments on the expenditure and your recommendations. And thereafter, we hand over to the DG to close and then...
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. We agree with your concerns, especially on underspending, and we always engage with the departments on the specific areas of underspending. And it's good that some of the areas that you have noted, we are engaging with the departments on how we can improve them, especially on NEBAS and EIP. We are constantly engaging with each other to ensure that at least there is an improvement, not only on spending, but also on the delivery of the programs. It was alluded by the honorable member that should not just be spending, but want to see the impact. So we really engage with the departments, and we are equally concerned about the underspending.
We ask for your quarterly expenditure report. Because as you compile it, you will then become aware of certain areas. And then in your quarterly report, they must submit to you their quarterly reports, CEDAS, those, you know, the entities, and then you give us an overall report inclusive of the CEDAS expenditure, quarterly expenditure report, because we want to see whether that money is moving or sitting somewhere. And whether it is going to those who are deserving or is going to our friends or our relatives, which would be so wrong, and would expect that one mustn't, you would expect consequence management. DG, okay, DG, your closing statement.
Thank you very much for the question. I think when we come here, we always meet with a different perspective of how we need to be.
Approaching the briefings to yourselves, and we really appreciate the questions. As I said in the beginning, I confined myself to the questions that you raised in the letter, and the limit of 20 slides. And therefore, there's several of the questions that were asked that is not covered in the presentation. And I think I would want to interact with the committee secretariats just about what are the unanswered questions. I think many of it was caution and guidance that you have provided to us. For example, there was a comment about the governance forum and with the entities. We can answer that question by giving you a copy of the terms of reference that we have, and maybe an example of the agenda of such a meeting, or the question about whether we have risk-based internal audit plans. The committee can ask us for anything, and we must submit that. But just to appreciate the comments, and I think it's very different trying to write a response than to answer it personally, because I don't think you ever meet the information needs when you try and write something down. But we will interact with the committee on that, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate this engagement, and it adds value to our work. I'm going to start by adding on what on the issue that was raised by Honorable Gwabaza, what he is raising is actually captured in our reports, where he is talking, say that we should maybe focus more on providing adequate services to a few SMMEs and cooperatives so that we can then get excellent results, as opposed to focusing on giving many that are not going to become viable and sustainable. Our view is that we should talk more about that. We think that the department, SAFER and SEDA, should actually have a mind shift and think along those lines, so that we are able to measure impact as opposed to having numbers. How many have we assisted, without measuring how many of those are successful? And we think that we can have measurable impact indicators, and we think we need to find each other with the Auditor General, the Office of the Auditor General, because when we engage the department would say this is what the Office of the Auditor General focuses on. And if the Office of the Auditor General focuses on numbers only, not on the impact made by the investment that government has made on SMMEs and cooperatives, we think that we are two worlds apart. We think that the measurable impact indicators would also, in as far as the mandate of the Department of Small Business is concerned, and also informed by the triple challenges of this country, would in our case be the permanent exit of poor families from the social grant register and the indigent registers of the municipalities. It is Treasury that is saying we need to shift budget from consumption to production. And consumption is social grants, it's free houses, it's free services, it's all those free things that are handed out by government as welfare. And if it is in the interest of Treasury and this country to shift budget from consumption, surely measurements of our performance should not be the number of cooperatives or SMEs that we have funded. It should be the number of successful cooperatives, and then we measure them through the number of poor people who were surviving on social grants, who are exiting the longer queue on for the RDP house. Ability to pay for services should be what we would use to check the impact of the investment on small businesses and cooperatives. The second issue that we can use to measure the impact is the ability of those people to pay for services that are being given to them for free. People beginning to build their own houses, people beginning to pay for water and electricity, thereby broadening the revenue base of the municipalities. It's not going to happen that a government will be able to provide social grants to families and also provide grants to municipalities that do not have a revenue base. It's not sustainable. So currently, we are sustaining a welfare state for the poor, and we are saying we are building a developmental state, but the developmental state only exists for the rich in this country. And we can then sustain 17 million people on social grants by taxing 12 million people that are working. So I think that the point of departure for this department and the Office of the Auditor General in terms of measuring the impact and the value that is added will be on that. Meaning that even Treasury then has to shift in terms of understanding a budget and the role of this department. And we think that it wasn't a mistake to establish this department. Government was very correct to establish this department because we cannot sustain poor people through social grants. But we also think that the budget allocated to this department will not make this department achieve what is expected of it to achieve. Leave aside the issue of the capacity in terms of them being able to do the work that they need to do. But even in Treasury, Treasury needs to understand that this department is very, very key in terms of facilitating the creation of 90% of the 11 million new jobs. And this department cannot then sustain itself and be able to do that with 1.6 billion when social grant, only the child support grant, is 50 billion per annum. Feeding children that are supposed to be looked after by their own parents, and this department can turn that situation around, enable those parents to feed their own children. So I think that we need that paradigm shift in terms of thinking, and that will need not only engaging here in this portfolio committee, but also Treasury, also the Auditor General, and also ensuring that all the support services that are there for development of cooperatives, the Cooperatives Academy, the establishment of it, the Cooperatives Development Bank, the mind shift in that, to move from it being more regulatory but to facilitate development, are all the things that we need to do. Thank you very much.
Just to say something. So maybe because we're here and we might not get this time again, you know, of sitting together to listen, maybe let's give him, Baba, just 3 minutes.
Chair, thank you for your indulgence. Chair, we consider ourselves as a partner to yourselves in the governance space. Albeit we're sitting at different perspectives. Our committee has been in place now for just over an 18-month period, and we just wanted to leave you with some of our observations as the committee that works or sits closer to the administration, albeit being independent. We believe, Chair, that for development to happen, the foundation has to be governance. If governance is not in place, it is unlikely that we will achieve any of the development objectives we have as government. I want to note, Chair, that we concur with the observations of the committee that much focus has to be placed on the developmental aspect. But I also want to give some level of comfort that in our observations there have been bold steps in building the foundation within the governance space. Our role as the Audit Committee Chair, in terms of the mandate we have, we look consistently on the issues of financial governance, performance, information management, risk management, ICT, the internal controls and the governance and the control environment. It is not perfect, Chair, but we've observed through the period we've been with the department the improvements in that area. We have now reached a point where we think we can even begin to shift our own focus into the developmental issues, given that a good foundation is being laid. In essence, Chair, we want to say, whilst we note your concerns, we want to say we think as independent external people that you have something good to work with, that there's a good foundation to build upon. Thank you, Chair.
We have an audit charter.
We do, Chair. I can give you a whole list of the things that we have, but we have we are at the top of our game plan, Chair, as the committee, and we're comfortable that we're servicing the department in terms of the governance space.
As long as you understand that you are not there to defend.
No.
You know why I'm saying that? I mean, you see this problem that National Treasurer sees with, it's something that was given to us by, I'm told it was, I think the whistleblower, it's the audit committee, but very late. As a result, we're not impressed. We ask them, where have you been all along for you to be talking about it today? Because your work is that one of inspecting and monitoring closely and actually making recommendations and following up on the implementation of those recommendations that you made. So that much as I'm saying that her role is to protect, yours also is to protect and make sure that there are no fruitless expenditure, wasteful expenditure. That's your role on a quarterly basis. The internal audit, where is the internal audit?
Internal audit is here, Chair.
Where is it? Oh, on a monthly basis. Yours is on a monthly basis. As a result, if you do your work correctly, we would not have selected you to come here. Because I said we select out of 40 departments and then identify those that we think have got a high risk. Just like the internal auditor must identify. And then to manage those risks, we then said, hey, come, so that we can talk to those risks. So you see, we understand exactly what we are doing. And then you must understand what is expected of you. And then, you know, deliver on your mandate. Okay. No, thank you so much. I think the meeting between ourselves is over. Can I appeal to the honorable members that we sit just for, I think it will not be for 15 minutes. Say you sure you don't want to join us and stand in for Mr. McLaughlin. Oh, you can't. Okay, all right. No, that's fine. Okay, so please. Yeah, okay, thanks, ma. Thank you so much. Thank you. And congratulations for your clean audit. Okay, thanks. Yeah, okay. honorable members, the members from the other committee, I think we can sit with us and help us to form the quorum. They are here so that we can adopt the minutes. Are we together? Mr. Govas, come again. Okay, bye-bye, ma. Thanks. All of the best.
With one request, Chair, that we negotiate minutes. We know minutes can take a day, and minutes can also take 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So let's negotiate for 10 minutes and move from 15.
Okay. All right. 10 minutes, ne? Yeah, okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thanks. Thanks, sir. Thank you so much. What's your role here? Okay. All right, shall we then look at the minutes? Okay, thanks, Bob. Let's look at the minutes. Let's look at the minutes of the 1st of August. All these minutes that I have here have been circulated on time. And just that we have not been able to form a quorum to adopt them. So the assumption is that all members have read all these minutes. So now I'll quickly go over the minutes, but we start with correctness of the minutes. Now page 1, any corrections? Page 2? Page 3? Page 4? Yes. I don't want to lose you, because I know if I don't rush, I'll lose you.
Oh, no. Fine.
Okay. So I said page 2, page 3. Any proposal for adoption? A seconder? Seconded. Thank you very much. 2nd of August, as I have already indicated, the minutes were circulated. The assumption is that members have read the minutes, because the minutes turned here several times. And then I'll then zoom on to corrections. Page 1, page 2,
Page 3. Any proposal for adoption? Pela members, you can't delay me, Pela. Yes, Honorable Shope, and then any seconder? Thank you. Then the minutes of the 3rd of August. Correction, page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Any proposal for adoption? Yeah, I know, it's only the members that... Yes, Honorable members, Nukwanyane, seconder?
I shall propose.
Thank you very much. Please don't make noise there, the back. I promise this is actually, they're acting in solidarity, the other members, because at least they're here. So you can't say we're 3, so we're meeting the quorum. All right. Okay, the meeting of the 15th, even these ones were circulated long time ago. So, corrections, page 1. Yes, ma. Come again. Okay. All right. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Any proposal for adoption? Honorable Member Gobaza, Honorable Members Nukwanyane, and Honorable Member Chopez Tole, thirded. Okay. 18th of August. These ones are also circulated on time. Members have read. Honorable Member, let's look at the corrections. Page 1. Okay. No, that's fine. We want to believe that you didn't make a mistake. No. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, that's fine. Page 1, today we will save you, but in future we'll have to try to be honest ourselves. Yeah. All right, corrections, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, any proposal for adoption? Honorable Member Gobaza, Honorable Member Snukwanyana seconds. Did you second me, Honorable Member Snukwanyana? Yeah, please, let's concentrate, we're finishing now. Members will go now. She can't be not sure because I know she attended all the meetings like me.
No, I think she's just short. You can't see her.
Oh, she's short, ne? Okay. All right. Minutes of the 22nd of August. Every day the meeting. Okay. Corrections. And it's not out of our own design. It's just in the nature of this committee. Page 1. Corrections. Page 1. Page 2. What are you proposing, Honorable Member Shoppers, so I can hear from here?
No, I was just saying that we didn't have to gain progress with a work hour list.
No way. It's
and
the work.
To,
the kind of work. It's the kind of work you're doing. Okay. All right. I said corrections, page 1, page 2. Any second that? Honorable Member Tolazo, second, Honorable Member Snukwanyan. You know, the minutes of the 23rd of August, we are finishing. We are finishing. First page, any correction? Second page? Third page? Fourth page? Any proposal for adoption? Honorable Member Snukwanyan and Honorable Member Tolazo, second. And then the last set of minutes, 25th August, Honorable Members, these minutes were circulated on time and members have read the minutes. The assumption is that members have read the minutes. So let's look at page 1. Corrections on page 1. Page 2. Page 3.
any proposal for adoption? Honourable Member Sobaza, Honourable Member Sukwanyana, Honourable Member, the announcements are that in our next meeting, we will be meeting at 9 on Tuesday. I'm going to defer the management meeting because we would want, there are two things that we have to adopt before the minister. She must come and present to us present the plan for our site visit. So you must go and prepare and come and present to the committee, eh? So that members can satisfy themselves, ask questions, and also if there are inputs, they can input as you present. Number two, we also have got to adopt the operational plan. Remember, it was presented to us. So let's, you know, all these little outstanding things, let's do away with them so that we can then make good progress in our work. So we are left with those ones, the two. Ne? Thereafter, then the meeting will start at 10. But thank you very much, and thank you for coming, but also thanks for your patience. It is said that patience is virtue. And indeed, I wish you a good weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, ma. Thank you so much. Hey, we must thank the members for assisting us, you know, to adopt our meanings. Because what happens when we start, ne? We will always form the quorum. But towards the end, I lose members one by one. Ne? Like now, ne? You know. So once they are gone, then you can't adopt the meanings. So this is what has happened. They always come. But
productive.
Yeah. Let's listen to the whip.
No, I'm